It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. In short, the period was very much like the present period.
You're listening to community radio, KBOO Portland.
Hello. 1, 2, 3.
What would KBOO be without its more than 300 volunteers? They support the station with everything, and now they need someone to support them. KBOO is looking for a community organizer who would bolster and empower our volunteers. Are you the right person, or do you know someone who is? Then go to kboo.fm to learn more about the essential functions of the volunteer coordinator and the qualifications we're looking for. To apply, please email your resume and cover letter to hiring@kboo.org by Sunday, March 6 at midnight. You can also apply by mailing your resume and cover letter to KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Remember, KBOO is a volunteer-powered radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the second Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Jackson Ward in Richmond, Virginia, is usually talked about in its 20th century context, the Harlem of the South. It was a thriving neighborhood and business district. In 1903, Jackson Ward's Maggie Walker became the first woman of any race to charter a bank in the United States. Performers like Ella Fitzgerald, Ray Charles, and Duke Ellington would travel to the Hippodrome Theater to cut a rug all night. Now, two daughters of Virginia, Sesha and Anjali Moon, are taking Jackson Ward all the way back to the late 1700s, when the first known black homeowner in Richmond purchased his lot.
What we saw when we came across his home was, as Sesha likes to say, our Monticello.
From Virginia Humanities, this is With Good Reason. I'm Lauren Francis, one of the producers of the show, and today's host, as we explore homecomings in a shifting Virginia tourism landscape. Anjali Moon was preparing to celebrate the fifth anniversary of her film festival, Africana Film Festival, when she asked her sister Sesha Moon for a favor. Could you help me find a few facts about historic Jackson Ward? 2 years later, that favor has become the Jackson Project. Through the Jackson Project, the sisters aim to recontextualize the history of Jackson Ward, the nation's first federally registered black neighborhood, and to reconstruct the home of its first resident.
What Jackson Project's work really focuses in on is what happened before 1871. So our research really starts in like that 1760 timeframe when William Byrd, the namesake of the park that we grew up across, he is technically the founder of Richmond, quote unquote. And he comes into some financial troubles in the mid 1700s. He parcels off some of his privately owned land and does like a lottery, I guess you could say. Then what you have is the first known black homeowner in 1793. And so, when we were at the height as a Harlem of the South, and a Black Wall Street, it's because we were standing on a good 3 to 4 to 5 generational shoulders
right.
of Black homeowners and entrepreneurs in what would become Jackson Ward.
Tell me about Abraham Skipwith, that first Black homeowner in 1793.
This is a Black man who revealed to have direct ties to the Founding Fathers. We know that he's enslaved as early as around 1760s, in the 1760s, by a gentleman named Jacqueline Ambler, Secretary of State under Thomas Jefferson. He's enslaved with him for several years, and then in 1782, he's sold to a gentleman named Thomas Bentley in Williamsburg. He's enslaved with Thomas Bentley from around 1782 to 1785, at which time he files a legislative petition for his freedom because apparently Thomas Bentley has passed away. All that we know is that the legislative petition wasn't granted.
Right.
So we had to do a little bit more digging, understand more about Thomas Bentley. In short, he abruptly dies. There are some issues with his will. And what that causes is that his estate is caught up in court for several years. Once the estate is actually settled in December of 1789, 2 weeks later, that's when we have Skipwith manumitting himself from 2 local merchants named Warrington and King. His next known whereabout after 1789 is when he lands back in Richmond on the northern edge. He buys these parcels. That following year, he manumits his wife, Chloe, and his granddaughter, Maria. He, in addition to being the first known Black homeowner, he's also one of the first Black Richmonders or Virginians with a fully executed will, which he establishes in 1797. He then uses that will to earmark funds for the descendants that he's unable to manumit during his lifetime so they can manumit themselves, hopefully. But then it's a remarkable will. I mean, he writes this in May of 1797, and he bequeaths, in addition to the funds to manumit yourself, but he bequeaths a gun, silver, gold, livestock, and a horse and buggy. We're from Richmond, Virginia, former capital of the Confederacy. Never in my wildest dreams did I learn in school that a Black man was riding around Richmond, Virginia with his own horse and buggy.
Like his own, not in service.
His own, not in service. It's so outside of the narrative that we've ever been told.
So what became of his home and his land?
It stayed in the family for about 100 years. It was then his family kind of over time either moved out of the state or passed away. And so it was left into a trust. The trust sold the home to the Coleman family. And the Coleman family kept the home until the 1950s. They only left because the home was forcibly condemned in order to make way for the interstate. Like most homes in Jackson Ward, we were under the impression because of some records that we found and then just because of the fate of most other homes, we were under the impression that the home was demolished. And so it was moved by the family who is considered to be really the godmother. One of the women is the godmother of Virginia preservation. She and her crew saw the architectural value of the home, decided to dismantle it and to move it to their land. Let's be clear about this land, though. This land was 5,000 acres, a former tobacco plantation that was once owned by the Secretary of War for the Confederacy, James Seddon. So what we have in Skipwith is a man who worked his entire life to manumit and free himself and his family in order to establish his own place, his own dwelling, and pass that down for that home to be broken down and then taken back to a plantation. And it's been at that site since 1958. And as Tisha said, this kind of leads us to our work because what we saw when we came across this home was, as Tisha likes to say, our Monticello. Right. This is an opportunity for us to have an actual remnant. First of all, to have a remnant from the 1700s is rare, typically in general. But most certainly it's rare for something that was owned by Black people. And so initially our desires were to move the home, to actually lift it off of the foundation and move it back to Jackson Ward. But after doing the architectural reviews, you know, we were able to kind of denote that maybe it's not as much historical structure there as we would like. And so we are exploring what it means to actually rebuild the home, reconstruct the home for interpretive purposes, but to be able to do that in a place that is geographically accurate within Jackson Ward. And so that is what the Jackson's Project current initiative is, which is the Skipwith Roper Homecoming.
it was sad to know that a lot of the original fabric was removed from the home. But what this reconstruction for interpretive purposes will allow us to do is to actually rebuild the home with the accuracy that reflects what Skipwith's home originally looked like. But I think some of the bigger opportunities with this, one, as Anjali said, to have remnants remaining of from the 1700s, but especially of a Black man, is rare. And not only with the house and the opportunity to reconstruct his property, but we also have this man's legislative petition, his manumission papers, as well as his will. A lot of Black American history from that time is based on oral traditions. But to actually have papers that are his exact words are quite rare. But then when we even think about what does this mean? One, it means that we can tell a more multidimensional narrative about what it meant to be Black and from Richmond and from Virginia and in America at the time of this country's origins by leveraging the origin story of Jackson Ward. But then we're also able to look at the field of historic preservation. You know, what does it mean to protect Black spaces and faces and places and, you know, deciding what sites are worth saving. Because this is an exercise in what it looks like to have to reconstruct because our spaces weren't held sacred once they were, quote unquote, saved. But this will also make us come face to face with the role of infrastructure projects in disconnecting communities of color like a Jackson Ward.
Yeah, it almost seems to me like the more I learn about Richmond's history, the more I'm like, oh, people like made a decision that I wouldn't know this.
That
it would take me until like my 20s.
Oh, yeah.
To really start to connect these dots.
You know, I want to mention Gary Flowers. Mm-hmm. We took one of his tours. Okay, Brother Flowers is just like...
Everyone needs to
He's a man. He understands Jackson Ward history and is so beautifully anecdotal and rich and textual when he delivers it. But in talking about it, talking about the history of Virginia, at one point he was talking about what was called the Virginia Way. That was an actual thing that was created in the late 1600s, early 1700s, as they were thinking about like revolutions that are happening, specifically the one in Haiti. Mm-hmm. There was a level of fear, you know, going around the globe around, is that what we have to anticipate what Louverture brought to task? Well, in Virginia, what they decided was, if we don't talk about it, no one will know that it existed. How else will they know? There is no internet. They only know what we tell. And, you know, that was labeled the Virginia Way, to suppress information that we don't want out. And so I think that that's what we see at play with a great deal of histories, unknown Black histories, histories that, you know, maybe white histories that people want to submerge. And that's just been the reality. And so to be here in 2022, but launching this in 2020, at a time where people can actually respect the stories like a Skipwith that are being told, and they don't just collect dust in the corner, is really exciting and important.
And so while Jackson Project is helping to lead this work alongside several other organizations that have been doing this work well beyond the year in which the Moon Sisters have, you know, started to enter into this space, that was our question. We know what the Virginia Way is, but what are institutional responsibilities to chart a new way for Virginia moving forward? We know what the last 150 years meant for Jackson Ward. What is the commitment to chart a more diverse and equitable and inclusive and accessible future for the ward? Because that access is important. Sure, we can have the desire to want to find out who is our Jackson, but do we have access to the archives and to the records to be able to do that? And when we walk into these spaces, do we feel welcome? Do we feel like we belong? And I think that's one of our overarching goals with the Jackson House, is to help partner with institutions across the city to create a space where the community members, as well as travelers that are coming into Richmond, can say, yes, I found that space where I can find out who my Jackson is.
And once those Jacksons are found, are those institutions ready to elevate those truths, right? Are they really ready to add that into their coffers in terms of the stories that they tell? And that is what I'm hoping to see. I'm hoping that Jackson Project is one of many, right? Because we've been in embracing certain spaces, but we also know people love to, we don't want to be tokenized in the work that we're doing.
Right.
right? And so how do we hold these institutions accountable to say we are looking to open the door and keep it open for others who come behind us to continue to tell? Because we know that Skipwith isn't the only story that's emerged. So as they continue to be unearthed, are you holding space for them and will you hold them in the proper regard?
Sisha and Anjali Moon are the founders of the Jackson Project, a historic reparative nonprofit that aims to recontextualize the history of Jackson Ward, the nation's first federally registered Black neighborhood. Just down the street from where Abraham Skipwith purchased his lot, Kelly Lemon's Cafe, the urban hang suite, is jumping. She spent her whole career in Jackson Ward and credits it for making her the hospitality and tourism giant that she is. Lemon is a member of the Virginia Tourism Board of Directors. She says that Richmond will become the number one destination for tourists who want to learn about Black American history. And it's thanks in part to beloved restaurants like Croker Spot and Mama J's, where Lemon established roots in the hospitality industry as a manager. So you said...
Not so you said. Uh-uh, nope. I'm over with. Over with already.
You said that Croker Spot is the OG, but it's Mama J's that really put the Black restaurant scene in Richmond on the map. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, okay. See, you're trying to give me a trouble already. What I mean by that is Croker Spot... through the legacy of the Eggleston family and what they mean to Jackson Ward and Second Street and really being a staple in, you know, like Southern hospitality in general, right? You had the hotel, you had the restaurant, you had the entertainment venue. That's where people gathered. And so they laid the foundation. And Croker Spot was a household name to people in Richmond.
Right.
And it was my job when I got to Mama J's to make sure it was that Mama J's was a household name, period.
So how did you go about doing that?
Using the resources that I was afforded by being able to sit at tables that a lot of people weren't at. And it wasn't because of food that I was at those tables. But not knowing that was a passion of mine, and so I knew that that's where I was going. But take, for example, my career, you know, right here at VCU, you know, it was in student affairs, and student affairs is all about the student life, student engagement, and how you're being outside of the classroom. And so where you live, where you ate, you know, who you hung out with, all of those things. And so as I am, you know, learning those things or those places or who's in charge of those things around Richmond, you know, I am getting involved in these organizations. I'm doing the thing. And so it's making me know, all right, well, wait, so-and-so's on that list. How we get on that list?
Right.
You know, that, oh, you got a writer coming into Richmond. Oh, are they coming by to see us? So it was just I was able to be at the right place at the right time and be able to say that. And then what's grown out of that is now to be able to do it for more restaurants, as, you know, we're doing with Richmond Black Restaurant Experience.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask, like, how did that experience in Jackson Ward shape you to be such a giant in the hospitality industry?
My whole entertainment, my whole hospitality career started in Jackson Ward when I first started working for Mr. Bojangles restaurant, which was a brand of the Croker Spot, which, you know, the Eggleston family owned. And then came back home to Jackson Ward and, you know, I'm taking claim, but true Jackson Wardians are saying that I'm right there on the edge with you know, my coffee shop, Urban Hang Suite. Black culture, Black entrepreneurship was birthed, right? I mean, it was right. You can feel it, you know, it's right there. And because you can feel it, you know, I think a lot of what the work that we do is just a continuation of what they did. And we're just able to see it through.
So tell me about the Urban Hang Suite, where it is, and some of the history that you've learned about your spot.
So one of the things that Lester Johnson, owner of Mama J's, said, and other people have said, is that the spot chooses you. You don't choose the spot, right? So to know that it is on the north side of Broad Street, because, you know, when we were separate, you know, that was the North side was the Black side. That mm-hmm. is the side that's closest to Jackson Ward. Mm-hmm. The South side is the side that had all the white shops, and the North side had those same shops, but were for, you know, the Black community. Mm-hmm. And so to be in a building that I know was where, you know, our ancestors or those from Jackson Ward community were able to shop, where they could be entertained. And, you know, one of the stories that gets passed down from some of the older women from this neighborhood is that, you know, you wasn't in Jackson Ward at night unless you had a job to do, okay, honey? You know, like, you was getting your money, right? Uh-huh. And so, you know, there, it was some adult entertainment going on, you know, down there. And you can actually see kind of like the little cutouts of where you would walk down the steps. And on the walls in the back, if you look up, you can see the women, you know, that are still painted, wow. Yeah, on the walls, on the back of the building. I mean, it's a clear example to us right now what happened back then. Mm-hmm. And so, again, the Hang Suite was created to make sure that people of all, anything, any type of thought, any type of race, any type of mm-hmm. mindset, sexuality, whatever, would feel comfortable in coming in just to have casual everyday conversations, you know, wherever it may lead you over a, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
You know, what's yeah. up? How you doing today? You know, or your ear hustling. That's what I call it. Because somebody's at the table talking about something that you're highly interested in.
Right.
And you cannot help but get involved with it. All it's doing is you don't know whether or not that made a connection. That connection might create something. That thing that you create is culture.
Hmm. And it seems like the culture that you facilitate at the Hang Suite is something that you very much learn from being a part of all the culture in Jackson Ward. Seeing the way that everything flows together to make an experience.
Yeah, you know, not only Jackson Ward, let's just say Virginia. Let's, you know, mm-hmm. let's go Richmond, but we can go Virginia, mm-hmm. you know. I am a proud Black woman from Virginia, you know. And, you know, people that aren't from Virginia be like, oh, you claim that? You know,
right.
That racist state. Yes, I do, because we started here. The mm-hmm. first, the mm-hmm. 22 and odd Africans right here mm-hmm. in Hampton. And so you feel it in your blood. And 1 in 4 can trace their roots back to Richmond. You know, again, mm-hmm. don't play us. We started this.
Right, you play right? yourself.
You don't
you
play.
You from here.
Right, right. Put some respect on Richmond's name. And so, you know, when it comes to the fact that I could live that proud, mm-hmm. but be raised in all white neighborhoods, go to all white schools, but never lose that, you
right.
know, when I finally got to my Blackness and coming to Richmond and being in, you know, the North side of Richmond, or, you know, traveling to the West End and the South side, but just truly also knowing what the people that live there went through, you know, with us being the capital of the Confederacy, mm-hmm. but also knowing that they was doing it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it is very evident that they were doing it
right.
back then. And the only reason why they weren't celebrated was because it was so frowned upon that they was doing it back
yeah.
then.
In a major way.
In a major way.
So tell me about your work with the Virginia Region Tourism Board.
Yeah, you know, again, all of this stuff is in God's plans. It's all organic. It's all very natural.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm Virginia's head varsity cheerleader. You know, like, I feel like I've always rode for this state,
mm-hmm.
And wanted people to come and wanted people to visit, because we see every season,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of weather. We have we got mountains, we got water, you know, we got politics, we got city, we got country, you know, like, what? Like, we're in the middle. We're the northeast. We're like right there mm-hmm. in the middle. We got north, we got south, you know? And so I just, when I was kind of really, really telling people to come visit Richmond and being a spokesperson for Richmond, you know, me originally being from Tidewater, and living in three different areas down there, and then, or two different areas down there, and then coming to this area, living in two different areas, being in Charlottesville because I went to UVA, like, mm-hmm. knowing what was going on in Roanoke, you know, feeling what was happening in Fredericksburg, again, I felt like, wow, I know this state and I'm an advocate for this state. So it was a blessing to be appointed by Governor Northam on the Virginia Tourism Board.
So I want to also talk about some of those recent developments with Virginia tourism. There's been a greater focus on Black Richmond. So what have you seen?
Mm-hmm. So, well, okay, you got two levels. You got two areas with that. So Richmond region tourism, which is, you know, under the umbrella of Virginia Tourism Corporation, they have, you know, always tried to figure out how to, you know, maybe advance areas to which Richmonders are, or Central Virginia, excuse me, is highlighting or celebrating. Mm-hmm. And so they started out with Out RVA. And, you know, they grew that to, you know, huge levels, not only here in Richmond, but, you know, made an example for what we should be doing on a state level. Now, a year ago, August, they created BLK RVA, which is a very intentional tourism program to make sure that not only, again, Central Virginians knew what was happening in the Black experience, but if you came to visit, it was all right there in mm-hmm. one space. Now, every year, they choose a theme. And so this year, Virginia tourism, one of the themes that they are going with is Black travel is essential. And it is to make sure that our outdoor space, our agricultural spaces, you know, our main attractions, mm-hmm. our hotels, all of those places, you know, not just got a photo of a Black person, you know, but, you know, truly can tell the Black experience or a diverse experience, you know, by just maybe sitting around and kind of listening to the people that are there, the locals, you know. And one of the things that I learned that I thought was interesting is that the data was showing is that when Black folks travel, it's not that we're exactly looking for other Black people, mm-hmm. but we want to know, is it more people than just white people there? You know what I'm saying?
Diversity. That sounds very familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's just like, is it more than just,
yeah,
you know? And so that's a different mindset. I think when some of these places think, oh, we got to attract the Black traveler, we got to mm-hmm. do the Black people things. That's not what we're saying. You know, don't put the fried chicken in the watermelon and the red right. Kool-Aid on your menu. That's not it.
Yeah. So I did want to ask you, what does Black travel is essential mean to you?
Mm-hmm. It means that that we as Black Americans need to also probably step out of our comfort zone and give some places a try that are trying. You know, not everybody's going to get it right, but we may be missing out on a lot of fun because we're like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to go there. You mm-hmm. know, you heard about them in 1986. Uh-huh. You know, and I'm like, wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you might be right, but
86.
Yeah, so is 1986. Ooh,
you
know,
you might gotta let that one go.
You might do, but they might not. You know, you gotta. But that's the folklore of it. Mm-hmm. That's the Green Book. Right, you know what I'm saying? Right. That's the whole thing. Is that, you know, your grandma's scaredness of that place in 1986 is you still feeling that?
That has created your entire geography mm-hmm, of mm-hmm, the city, of the state. Mm-hmm.
You've heard that one story mm-hmm. over and over mm-hmm. and over again, and you swear you believe it because you've heard it so many times.
So what do you see happening for Black tourism in Virginia, or what do you hope to see happen in Black tourism in Virginia over the next 10 years?
We will be one of the number one destinations to travel to if you want to learn anything about Black American history and culture. If you are not stopping in Richmond, Virginia first,
you're gonna miss a lot.
You kinda went backwards. Did you want to go in order, or did you want, like, how did you want, yeah, you just want to piece this thing together? No, we're gonna make sure, and I think that the work that is being done by some of the Black leaders in this city and in this state in general, is going to define that, with some very, you know, monumental moments coming in 2026, you know, and beyond. But I think that the stories that we are unpacking are going to allow for, you just have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, again, it's going to feel, put some respect on Richmond, you're going to feel a little stupid if it's not in that order.
Kelly Lemon is the owner of the Urban Hang Suite Social Cafe and a member of the Virginia Region Tourism Board.
This is With Good Reason. We'll be right back.